From Bedford to Middletown, Somerset to York, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, continuing our focus on education freedom, this week we talk with State Senator Judy Ward about the proposed Lifeline Scholarship Program that would give new educational opportunities to students in underperforming school districts. Commonwealth Court has ruled Pennsylvania's current public school funding formula is unconstitutional. To learn more about the ruling and what might happen next, Joe Geiger has Frank Gamrat from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in the Community Benefit Spotlight. And Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania takes a look at wins for education freedom happening in states all across the country on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Today, we have part two of our two-part series of programs focusing on education freedom. Pennsylvania has a number of underperforming school districts. To help parents afford new educational opportunities for their children, State Senator Judy Ward has proposed the Lifeline Scholarship Program. Senator Ward represents the 30th State Senate District in South Central Pennsylvania. Senator, welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Judy, the Lifeline Scholarship Program. This is a program designed to help students in some of the poorest, most underperforming districts in the state. Give us an overview of what the Lifeline Scholarship Program is.
Thank you so much for having me. This piece of legislation has evolved over several sessions, and it's under the premise that a child should not be forced to stay in a failing school. We do have those across the Commonwealth. And so this would be a Lifeline Scholarship would be available to children in any grade, K through 12, and it would go to the lowest 15% performing schools. So some of these failing schools, these students would be able to go to a private school that would serve their needs better. And as it's evolved, scholarships can only be used for educational expenses associated with their new education, so mostly tuition. And it would not apply to homeschool students, but it would be to a private school. And as you know, many parents really want and try to get their students, they want more for their students. Sometimes they want a school that is faith-based. And so we're able now to, you know, provide that through this. And it's not for higher ed. The bill is written, we're sort of tweaking it, and we've looked at some of the issues that have come up in the past and some of the things that were stumbling blocks in the past, and we're trying to work through those things. Governor Shapiro, as he was campaigning, said that he would be supportive of a Lifeline-like scholarship. So we've been trying to work as soon as, actually the week after he was sworn into office, I reached out to the administration and said, okay, I'd like to talk. Let's talk about what your idea is. What is the governor's idea of a Lifeline-like scholarship bill? So let's work together. So we've sat down with them. We've not gotten a lot back from them, but I'm the eternal optimist, and I'm hoping that we can, you know, have some input and work on some of this, because I think it's something that really needs to happen in the Commonwealth. Many other states have some sort of, well, even this year, Florida, Arkansas, Utah, and Iowa have passed universal educational savings account programs for students. And 31 states now offer official programs that provide either a scholarship to private school or private school tuition assistance for families. So this is something that I think it's about time we do here in the Commonwealth. And like I said, we have great public schools in some areas, but some areas just don't meet the mark. And so this gives students an opportunity, just a huge opportunity to get a really good education and possibly even a faith-based education. So that's it in a nutshell.
It's interesting. You would think that helping students in underperforming schools in poor school districts would be something pretty much everybody would rally around, but this is Pennsylvania, yeah. And we know that even the best ideas will draw some opposition. You referenced some stumbling blocks in the past that we have to work our way through. What
yes.
sort of stumbling blocks have you encountered trying to get this accomplished in past sessions?
The issue of what exactly we include in this. Do we include, we have tuition expenses, but do we include uniforms? Do we include field trips? What do we bring into this? Do we books? And it seems to be if it's other expenses other than tuition, it gets really scrutinized. But if you come from an underprivileged family, a lot of these are stumbling blocks for you. The tuition and cost for a field trip or maybe to participate in a school sport or whatever it might be. But we're trying to speak to tuition in the bill. And, you know, my hope is that if we can get something like this passed in Pennsylvania, we can agree on this, then we can see the fruits of this, and we can expand it, and we can help more students, and we can have, it would really be beneficial to our families, really.
We are talking with State Senator Judy Ward about education freedom, and particularly the focus is on the Lifetime Scholarship Program, which is a proposal making its way currently through the General Assembly. And, Senator, in addition to this program, which would help students a certain percentage and some of the schools that are failing the most, what other education opportunities are available for students around the Commonwealth? Because oftentimes, as we know, parents would like to find an alternative, but they can't afford it. Are there scholarship opportunities, scholarship programs available?
We're very fortunate here. We have the Educational Improvement Tax Credit, known as EITC, and we have OSTC. And according to our friends at the Commonwealth Foundation, over 62,500 students benefited from EITC and OSTC scholarships in 2020 and 2021. And in that same time period, the state denied over 76,000 student applications for EITC and OSTC scholarships. And so that tells you the demand for these scholarship dollars. And I worked at a private school. I worked at a Catholic high school and did development for a while. And these programs are very much in demand. There's so much student need. So even if your parents can pull the money together to get you into a private school, it doesn't mean that it's easy for the family to make those tuition payments. So any amount that you can take off the top of that is welcome for families. And maybe there's multiple students. You know, you have multiple children in the school. In my office, I have someone, my office manager in my district, she has her two daughters in private school, and it is very tough. You've got a pretty large tuition payment, but it's what you believe in. It's what you feel is the right thing to do for your children. So all people should have that kind of opportunity. So these are very, very helpful programs.
We did have a ruling by the State Commonwealth Court here, Judy, a couple of months back, and they ruled that the current system of funding for public schools, government-funded schools, is unconstitutional. As we look toward a solution to that, of course, we've already seen the education establishment just demanding that, what, close to $1 billion be added to the public school budget. As we work through the budget process here in Harrisburg over the next month or 5 or 6 weeks, do you see an effort to increase funding for programs like EITC and to give students options outside of the public school system?
We're hopeful. I mean, in our Republican caucus in the Senate, that is one of our goals, is to increase the funding to these programs, because we do have so many underperforming schools in the Commonwealth. And so that's a big focus for us. And that is our hope in budget negotiations, that we'll be able to get some additional dollars into these schools. And I think, I mean, you and I have talked before about how some of these, the way things are going with public schools, you know, having some of the library books that we have on gender identity and all of that, it's something that at least people in my legislative district are very uncomfortable with. They're uncomfortable with some of these library books and some of the books that their children are bringing home from school. So just in this day and age, there needs to be options for parents. And so these kind of programs provide that. Charter schools, EITC, and this now Lifeline Scholarship legislation, I mean, we're just hopeful that we can get some of this through the legislature and keep these programs going. They're very important, especially to my constituents in rural Pennsylvania.
We have seen an upswing in parental activism around the country in the last couple of years, Senator. In your district, just anecdotally, especially with school board elections taking place this year, do you see more parental interest in education than what maybe we've seen in past years?
I most certainly have. Yes, parents have been silent too long. I think there was traditionally you kind of send your kids to school, you just depend on the fact that they're getting a good education and it's not going to be biased and it's not going to be, they're not going to be jamming agendas down your throat. But parents, I think especially through COVID, when parents were at home with their children, helping them with their studies and helping them online and listening to curriculum and looking at books and seeing what their students were bringing home or what they were not bringing home, but were asked to do, I think it was eye-opening to parents.
State Senator Judy Ward, she represents the 30th District, which is South Central Pennsylvania. What, you have Altoona, Blair County, Huntington County, Fulton County, Juniata County. Did I miss anybody?
Mifflin and Juniata, yes.
All right.
We got all five of them.
We got all five of them. So Senator Ward is one of the sponsors of the Lifeline Scholarship Program, would offer opportunities for students in poor-performing school districts to have more educational freedom. Senator, if we have listeners who would like to learn more, what's your web address? Where can they find you?
www.senatorjudyward.com.
State Senator Judy Ward, Senator, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
A Commonwealth court ruling earlier this year found Pennsylvania's public school funding formula to be unconstitutional. Now the legislature must decide how to fix the problem. To learn more about the options, Joe Geiger has Frank Gamrat from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy in the Community Benefit Spotlight.
Thank you, Loman, and thank you, Frank, for being a guest on the Lincoln Radio program.
Well, thanks for having me, Joe.
Give us some background on the legal case that resulted in Judge Renee Cohen Jubilier's ruling Pennsylvania's current public education funding formula to be unconstitutional.
Judge Jubilier made a ruling way back in February of this year, 2023, that took her a few months of deliberation from school districts, typically lower-income school districts, to say, hey, wait a minute, this funding system's unfair, we can't keep up with richer districts, something has to give. And, of course, she agreed with them and said the current system of funding is not equitable across Pennsylvania and is asking the legislature to go back and redo it. Specifically, she's asking about this whole two-tiered funding system where the local is responsible for a certain amount of funding, and then the state comes in with a certain amount of funding. Of course, you backfill with some federal funding, and she's finding that that system just doesn't work.
Give us some examples of the funding disparity among the school districts. Mm-hmm.
When you look at the disparity she's discussing is this aid ratio that the state uses. Now, this aid ratio is based on two pieces. One, it's the market value of property per average daily membership. That is the amount of students in the school. And you add to that what's called the personal income aid ratio, which is the amount of personal income in that district divided by the number of kids in that district. And you combine those two ratios, and you end up with this ratio that could be anywhere from 0.15 to 1.0. So it's going to be less than 1 but greater than 0. And, of course, the higher to 1 you are, the more money you're supposed to get. The farther away from 1 you are, the less state money you are supposed to get. So that was the basis for this whole funding scheme, was how much money can you raise locally, either through your property taxes or through the partial income tax. Actually, it is the wage tax that's collected. And allegedly, the more you raise, the less you get from the state. But what the judge found was that's not always the case.
With all the funding going in, back when the Department of Education was formed, I believe the United States ranked pretty close to number one in the world in education. And now with all the money that's gone into education, we're down around 26, 27. It just seems like a losing proposition to keep doing it the way we have been doing it.
That's a great point. You know, as I just said, the state collects, and this was for the 2020 to 2021 school year, collected $32 billion between state, local, and federal sources for education. And yet, we have a lot of struggling districts out there. There is yet to be a specific study that links a positive relationship between money and educational performance. And so the question, as you mentioned, is why have we fallen so far? And I know this is more of a country thing versus a state thing, but the root of education is all the same. One of the things that nobody ever really wants to confront because of whatever social niceties that are out there is the basic educational ability of a student is going to be grounded in their family and their background. Look, you can take a child from a family that has a very good interest in the kid's education, helps them with their homework, make sure they're properly attired for school, make sure they're properly fed and able to do the work that they're able, you know, that they're required to do, and that student will be successful no matter what district you drop them into. If you have a parent that doesn't care, they've used the public education system as more of a daycare. Just get the kid out of my house, get him away from me for a while, and then bring him home at 3 o'clock, and then I'll deal with them. That doesn't worry about feeding them or clothing. Maybe they can. I get the whole nicety of they can or they cannot, but you have actively involved parents, that child's going to do well. If you've got parents who don't care, that child's not going to do well because they're not going to have the support system that they need to be successful in schools. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing today. You know, we keep pouring billions and billions of dollars into the children of Pennsylvania, and yet we're really not seeing a tremendous increase in educational results.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today is Frank Gamrat, Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute. Frank, where do we go with this? Is there a solution?
Pouring more money into it is certainly not going to cause educational outcomes, but right now there's a lot of variances in the money given based on this aid ratio index. You look at places like Shamokin District, their state, local, federal spending is $13,000 per student. That's lower than the state, $18,800. New Hope Salisbury, though, can raise $34,710 between those three forest areas, $33,000 between those three areas. And yet, when you look at the ratios, Shamokin's 0.79, New Salisbury's 0.15. Shamokin received $8,736 per ADM. New Hope Salisbury received $5,180. There's not a whole lot of difference in there. You have some, okay, Lion Mountain District in Northumberland County, significantly lower aid ratio than Shamokin at 0.65, yet they received $10,347 in state aid. Lower ratio, less money. West Millsx, 6.64 ratio, they received $12,381 in state funds. In our neck of the woods, Pittsburgh Public School District, they have a ratio of 0.27, yet they received $11,513 in state funds. This is all over the place. There was a piece put in legislation years and years ago called Hold Harmless. And what that says is, even though you're losing students, we're not going to penalize you in your state allocation. And that has benefited districts like Pittsburgh. You know, Pittsburgh at one point in time had 60,000 students in its district. They're now knocking on the door 20,000. They've lost a bunch, yet because of Hold Harmless, they haven't been penalized. Theoretically, if you have fewer students, you should be getting less money. because you don't have the students that need the resources. But in Pennsylvania, that has never been the case or has not been the case, and that has caused these things to go out of whack. Where do we go from here? The judge has said, you can't do this anymore. Come up with something else. Look, there's really two solutions off the top of our head. One is you get rid of property taxes altogether, because as long as you have this two-step funding system of local and state, there's going to be inequities because you're inevitably going to have richer municipalities and poor municipalities. So let's say we just get rid of the local funding altogether, and then the state funds it all. Well, how's the state going to do that? You know, is it going to be just give everybody $15,000 and say, there you go? What do you think the richer municipalities and districts are going to say to that? What about the teachers and the other workers that are all contracted through their unions to these school districts? You can ask them to take a big pay cut. You know, there's no question that the teachers in richer districts make more money than teachers in poorer districts. Are they all going to take pay cuts? The answer is a resounding no. They'll have a fit. You know, they'll sue left and right, especially since these contracts are already signed and agreed. So that's going to cause problems.
And education is pretty much run by the unions these years.
Oh, absolutely.
Frank, you gave us a lot to think about here, and I'm sure that you have a lot of this posted on the Allegheny Institute website.
AlleghenyInstitute.org. Anyone can go to our policy brief list and see all the topics we talk about, including this one.
Frank, I could go on talking with you about this all morning, but unfortunately we have limitations on the program time. But I really thank you for being a guest on my program. Glad to actually meet you after all this time, and wish you good luck with your race to solution.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, and I look forward to talking to you again.
This is Joe Geiger on the Lincoln Radio Program. My guest today was Frank Gamrat, Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Back to you, Loman.
All across the country, states are giving students and their parents more educational freedom. For a look at the progress being made, we turn to Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania, for this week's Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
Working across 36 states where Americans for Prosperity has a year-round permanent grassroots infrastructure, we get to realize legislative successes across multiple policy portfolios, while also witnessing the states where stagnation rules supreme. In the context of transformative foundational education reform, 2023 has proven to be extraordinary for students and parents alike. Today, we'll dive into some of those wins in hopes of inspiring transformational approaches to K-12 reform in Harrisburg. At Americans for Prosperity, our vision for foundational education is for the empowerment of every learner and family to discover how their passions and interests can create value in society, allowing them to live a life of both meaning and purpose. We want to advance policies that create conditions to enable families to be active consumers of education. We also want to incentivize and support more education entrepreneurship to meet family preferences. Polling has consistently shown that the public sees a future where families and educators work cooperatively on education. There will be many variations of this, from completely student-driven unschooling to parochial schools or no-excuse charters. We support a dynamic education market, which itself will enable families to exercise preferences. AFP supports funding every kid by enacting education scholarship accounts with universal eligibility, unbundling funding formulas so funds follow students to the school, course, or provider where they are learning, and directing grants to families. AFP supports ending residential assignments and expanding public school open enrollment, with school capacity being the sole criteria to accept or decline student transfers. AFP also believes education should put a family's preference first, not that preference of a system. Protecting learning pods and homeschool and other bottom-up solutions from legislative and regulatory threats is paramount. Offensive opportunities to pass transformative policy have been taken by a number of states just this calendar year. 6 states have passed and signed into law universal eligibility ESA programs: West Virginia, Arizona, Iowa, Utah, Arkansas, and Florida, listed in order of passage. Governor Ron DeSantis signed House Bill 1 into law on March 27th. The legislation converts the current Family Empowerment Scholarship Program and Florida Tax Credit Scholarship Program into an ESA and removes the cap on who can apply for the state's multiple scholarship programs to create universal eligibility. The language also allows Florida to adopt a part-time enrollment policy for students to take one or more courses at public schools that they are not enrolled in on a full-time basis. When we think about a North Star for transformative policy that positively impacts every family and student, Florida's House Bill 1 is Exhibit A. There's legislation in progress in Kansas, North Carolina, Nebraska, Ohio, Oklahoma, South Carolina, and Texas. Here in Pennsylvania, Representative Aaron Bernstein has filed an amendment that takes the language of last legislative session's House Bill 1 and guts House Bill 668, amending the bill to reflect House Bill 1, one of the most transformative educational reform packages in the nation. This measure is by far the most comprehensive education reform language introduced in our Commonwealth to date, providing multiple reforms in one package around choice, funding, and learning flexibility. Additionally, memos have been released to reintroduce Lifeline scholarship legislation. Lifeline scholarships are a small step in the right direction as they allow students in lower performing schools the opportunity to find alternative paths to learning. At AFP, we encourage legislators from both sides of the aisle to find ways to empower all children across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania by expanding educational opportunities. The future for students and families is bright in states that have not nibbled around the edges, but who have applied transformational principles in policymaking. Pennsylvania leaves much to be desired, but there are a number of members from both chambers who seek to ensure an excellent education for every student. To learn more about K-12 reform investments at Americans for Prosperity, visit americansforprosperity.org. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity. You can connect with us on Facebook by searching at PAAFP, and you can follow us on Twitter by searching at AFP Pennsylvania.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 28 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WHLM-AM and WBWX-AM in Bloomsburg, WTYM-AM in Katanning, along with WCNS-AM and FM in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.